I'm Eve Abrams. This is Wetlands Radio, a series about coastal restoration.
I mean, we're sitting on very high ground right now because this was once the Mississippi River.
For our final episode, let's start in New Orleans, in City Park, with Joseph Evans, horticulturalist, permaculturalist, a real plant guy.
This is one of the oldest surviving live oak groves in the country. What is ultimately one of our greatest national treasures. To me, it's like the Grand Canyon. It's an extraordinary place.
Joseph is an expert in sustainable regenerative landscape design. He suggested we talk in this grove of oak trees. He wanted me to understand something.
I just want to tie us to that deeper context of what New Orleans was. The very first map that I ever found was this one from 1849. This is not long ago. What is critical to understand about this is that New Orleans was not a bowl. It had biological diversity at its richest. But within 50 years of this, the entirety of this map of forest and settlements had been clear-cut and drained. The same thing that has happened to New Orleans has happened across our region. We've taken bulldozers to a garden.
What does this have to do with coastal restoration?
This is the coast.
This is the coast. I couldn't stop thinking about that. I live in New Orleans, and I don't think of myself as living on the coast. But zoom out to the state, the region, certainly the country. And clearly, I live on the coast. Realizing this, that the very urban city I live in, an hour drive from salty waters and waves, realizing this place is the coast, it's just one example of a bigger truth that scientist after scientist told me. Everything's connected.
Everything's connected.
Everything is interwoven, though, when you think about it.
Everybody's connected, and we're part of it. We're not outside of it controlling it.
You have to have the native plants as the basis of your food chain, and then the native insects like caterpillars that feed on those native plants, and then the various animals that feed on those insects, and then the other animals that feed on those animals.
I think in today's world, we've siloed things off so much. We are individuals. We forget that there are butterfly effects.
Because the past informs my future, so it's still here.
Everything you do, you can make an impact.
Soil, people, animals, plants, we're all related.
This is episode 12, Everything's Connected. I want to take some time now to tell you about an extraordinary body of scientific research called CRIMS. Both because some scientists think CRIMS is one of the greatest things Louisiana has ever done, and also because CRIMS embodies this idea that everything is connected. So let's go to the coast, Louisiana's literal coast, where marsh meets water, where you can only travel by boat. Because here is where you find the crown jewel of Louisiana science, this engine for understanding our coast. I'm with two biologists gathering data for CRIMS.
CRIMS is the Coastwide Reference Monitoring System.
Coastwide Reference Monitoring System.
Yeah, so the parts of that, it is coastwide with 400 sites across Louisiana. Reference means it's a reference network, meaning you have sites inside and outside of project areas, restoration project areas. So that's the reference part. And then we're monitoring, and it's a system. So.
Biologist Rachel Villani has worked on CRIMS for 15 years. Currently for USGS, the United States Geological Survey, who, with the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, run CRIMS, which officially began in 2006, nearly 20 years ago.
I think it's one of the best things Louisiana's ever done, personally. It's my personal opinion on that.
Can you say why?
it's just very forward thinking, and there's a lot of collaboration involved, and just the amount of data we have is super valuable.
To see some of that data gathered, I get in a small boat with Rachel and Gail Keyes, another field biologist.
Is that okay? Everybody comfortable?
We motor out into the marsh to two of those nearly 400 crim sites dotting Louisiana's coast.
Where are we? We're at Crims 147 down in Breton Sound. We're really close to the Gulf. It's right over there.
Oh, are those oil rigs out?
They are, yeah. Yeah. If we went about 3 minutes that way, we'd be out in basically open water. We're not going to do that. It's way too windy. We're in a little protected cove here where there's sometimes an otter.
A small, narrow boardwalk emerges from a sea of rushes. Rachel tells me these tall green plants are
Juncus romerianus. It's very stabby. So watch your eyes.
Rachel is one of those people who seems prepared for everything. She's wearing a baseball cap, sunglasses, sciencey pants replete with pockets and zippers, and several layers, the top one a blue and green plaid shirt. Today, Rachel's measuring elevation and accretion, which is the gradual accumulation of land. Rachel and Gail unload their gear, including a 65-pound tank of liquid nitrogen, which Rachel uses to take core soil samples.
We have an insulated hose and a copper pipe on the end that we call a bullet because there's a bullet point on the tip of it welded on there. That copper pipe is in the ground. I'm gonna turn the nitrogen on, and then it'll freeze the soil around the copper tubing.
Rachel pulls the pipe out of the ground, and frozen to it, exactly as it was underground, are layers of sediment. She looks for a white clay layer called feldspar.
We put this white powdery clay down 15 years ago at this point, and it just stays there, and then we can come back year after year and measure it.
So now you're measuring how much soil is above the feldspar line.
Yeah.
So feldspar is basically like ground zero when you started the research.
We know when we deployed this clay layer, and we know when we're here now, so we can tell how much sediment's been accumulated. 175, 180.
Rachel calls out measurements, and Gail enters them into an iPad.
179.
So essentially that means there are 179 millimeters more land here than there were when you started measuring.
Yeah, that is how much sediment has been added onto the surface since we put that clay down. That doesn't tell us how the elevation has changed, though. That's what the RSET rod is for. That's why we do them together.
The RSET rod is a half-inch rod driven deep into the ground with a jackhammer until it won't go any further. There's an RSET rod at every crim site. Think of it like a permanent table leg. On top of it, they attach a table, basically a flat piece of metal with holes in it. Into each hole, they slide a pin, like a toothbrush dropping into a toothbrush holder. And by measuring the length of these pins, from the table to the ground, you get the elevation.
So the pins are perpendicular to the ground.
Yeah, they're fiberglass pins. There's 9 of them. They're numbered 1 through 9. Pin 1 goes in the hole for pin 1 every time. It's the same pins. It's always the same pins. We always use the same table. We always use the same person. So we try to eliminate as much error as actually possible for consistency, because it's such micro elevation. You want to not have any error if you can avoid it. So we try to keep everything consistent. All right, pin 1.
Pin 1. 5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7.
Pin 2. 5, 6, 9.
5, 6, 9.
Pin 3. 5, 6, 8.
5, 6, 8.
Pin 4.
Carefully lying on a plank over the stabby Juncus romerianus, Gail reads each pin. Rachel records the measurements in their iPad.
5, 8, 4.
Is that centimeters?
Millimeters.
Millimeters.
Yep. So we're getting a measure of how much has been accumulated. And what is the elevation now?
In other words, these scientists are gathering data about how much land Louisiana is gaining in teeny tiny amounts. And there's lots of other data. Dozens of scientists work on CRIMS, compiling hourly water levels, temperature and salinity of the soil, vegetation surveys, high-resolution images of the entire coast. All of it is stored in the state's repository, known as SIMS, the Coastal Information Management System. And anyone can access this data through the CPRA website or the CRIMS website.
79.
USGS uses CRIMS data to make super accurate maps. The Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority uses CRIMS data for master plan modeling. Many CRIMS sites are on privately owned land.
But the data is all available free online, so there's a lot of uses for a lot of different people across all parts of coastal Louisiana. I mean, we do a lit review every year, and there's easily 50 plus papers every year that come out citing CRIMS in some way or another.
50 papers, by the way? That's a lot. Meaning CRIMS fuels our knowledge of the coast, how it's changing, and how restoration is going.
And because CRIMS has been going on for almost 20 years now, we have this super long-term data set that's really powerful and is the envy of other coastal states.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to pause and let that sink in. Louisiana invented a collaborative scientific system for gathering a vast amount of specific data about our coast. Plants, water, salinity, elevation, and on and on. This data fuels research, gets published in scientific journals, and helps us better understand how our world is changing. No other coastal state has a system like this. In these 12 episodes of Wetlands Radio, we've talked so much about what people have done on Louisiana's coast. Levied the river, drilled for oil, carved up canals. But people have also done this. Science, restoration, collaboration. It brings to mind something Mark Davis told me. Remember, Mark directs Tulane's Institute on Water Resources, Law, and Policy.
Yeah, our coast looks the way it looks because we've let it happen. Blame and liability are important conversations to have. The more important conversation is who's taking responsibility for what needs to be done.
The answer needs to be us. We live on the coast, and everything's connected.
We're all beings that live on the same planet.
Rosina Philippe, council elder of the Atakapa Ishak Shawasha.
There's no planet X, you know. We all inhabit this same life world in different places, but, you know, we're all here on this planet.
And in this deltaic alluvial sliver of the planet, land continues to slip away. We know what to do. We, the state of Louisiana, we are experts in restoration. We're number one. We know to mimic nature. We know to respect gravity and water and native plants, to cherish sand and oysters and marsh, to fill canals, to harness the river's power. But it's not just the coast that's imperiled. It's science. We are living in a very good time to take action, to claim responsibility for what happened before we got here and for what we will leave after we are gone. Wetlands Radio was reported and produced by me, Eve Abrams. Original music was written and performed by Greg Schatz, mastering by Evan Satanovich. Editing help from Marie Lovejoy, Rosemary Westwood, Rachel Berg, Anne Gislason, Garrett Hazelwood, Melody Chang, and Lane Kaplan-Levinson. Thanks also to Kellen LaCour-Connett, Natalie Waters, and Jean Turner, who you also heard in this episode. Story guidance for this series came from Michael Massamy, Wetlands Radio's project manager at BitNEP, the Barataria Terrebonne National Estuary Program, our partner in Wetlands Radio, along with WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. Funding was provided by BitNEP through the Environmental Protection Agency's National Estuary Program. To hear any of the 12 episodes of Wetlands Radio you missed, or to listen again, head to wwno.org or bitnep.org. That's btnep.org. That's it for Wetlands Radio. Thanks so much for listening.